Three-Way Double Cross by C.K. Shaw. Old Ab Haynes seemed to hear voices in the howl of the wind. He walked to the little square window with the rags chugged around it to keep out the icy air and scratched a peephole in the frost. But he couldn't see anything, for snow was plastered thick on the outside of the window. He walked back to the little sheet iron heater, and old Ab listened to the snapping of the pine knots in the stove. A fire on a winter night was a lot like a gun talking. He looked across the stove at Two-Button Lewis. Two-Button would not be hearing the snap of those guns. He had always been without a scrap of imagination. Ab thought back to their younger days, including Rock Rib Burton.
And we cut some fancy figures there on the rim of hell.
All three were born to swing, and yet here they were living out their days peacefully in the winter-bound Rockies of Colorado. Ab half regretted their peaceful ending. He looked across at Two-Button Lewis. Two-Button was not regretting the peaceful ending of those smoky days. Ab recalled the day he and Rock Rib Burton saw a slim youth shoot the head off a rattler and announce proudly that the snake had 10 rattles and 2 buttons. He had slipped a cog on rattlers and since had been known as Two-Button. Rock Rib noted the way the young man handled his gun and offered him the spot as third man in a gold hunting expedition. Ab remembered telling Rock Rib that the youth had no imagination, but Rock Rib said Ab had enough of that for 10 men. What appealed to Rock Rib was the way Two-Button handled his gun and the way he kept on handling it through 51 years. The Battle of Bull Run would not have been a special treat for anyone who caught Two-Button in action. When he started triggering a gun, things fell apart. And through it all, his eyes were as lonesome as a deer's, and his voice tucked up in velvet. Looking at Two-Button now, no one could have known that there sat a great warrior. You would have thought he was a burned stump if a few nettles had been growing beside him. Lifeless, no imagination. You would never have believed he had once laid his hand around a gun with no effort, balanced it, twirled it, fanned it, and through a thickening screen of smoke pulled the same fast, steady trigger. Any nine pins he was shooting at was the same as dead timber. He did not miss because there was nothing to excite him. If there'd been a little flourish to Two-Button, he would have been one of the long-haired boys of the smoke trail. But he did his shooting so mildly that nobody thought to tag him as deadly. It was talk at more than one bar that Two-Button Lewis had taken a bad step by throwing in with tough hombres like Rock Rib Burton and Ab Haynes. For 52 years, Ab Haynes had been doing the imaginative work for Two-Button, just as he was tonight.
Two-Button, if we'd got caught as we tried to make Bloody Pass when that posse was crowding us, I reckon our bones would have been well bleached by now.
Two-Button lifted his deer-like eyes.
30 years does a tolerable bleaching job, yeah.
And we'd be right well situated in hell by now. Know our way around.
But
and,
he wasn't caught. Say, Rock Rib is plenty late, and this is a he-wolf of a night.
Ab scratched the frost for another peephole, and again, plastered snow was all he saw. He lighted the lamp. It was a he-wolf of a night, as Two-Button had said. A bad night to be abroad if there was rheumatism in your joints. Old bones drew more cold than young ones. Rock Rib would be stiff as a poker, likely, and head into the winter with one of his bad cases of chilblains. A horse came into the yard. The shack clung to a hillside, and the space below and to the front was as bare as the palm of your hand.
The old son of a gun made it!
Ab opened the door, and the wind slapped his pants around his legs and whirled snow in his face.
Hello!
The big man slid from the saddle with a hitch-like movement that told of frost-numbed muscles.
Two-Button, get the pilgrim's horse in the lean-to. Let me take your coat here.
Oh, tarnation, this is a foul country, and a fouler night.
Not a fit night out for man nor beast. How about a whiskey to warm you?
Mm.
The man stood, turning his great bulk before the stove. Ab looked at the unlined face, the icy ash blue eyes that neither heat nor whiskey thawed. Boots with the Lone Star of Texas burned into choice cowhide covered his feet. The studded belt sagged with an ivory-handled gun. Ab saw the tip of a metal star cropping out above the stranger's vest and glanced at Two Button, who had returned from putting the horse away. Two Button hitched at the ribbed drawers, rolled up over the top of his pants, sat down and took off his worn boots so his toes could warm faster. Feeling Ab's glance, he lifted his mild eyes and then fell to rubbing his chilled toes. He had not caught Ab's signal for alertness.
How about a bait of beans?
The man nodded and kept rubbing his muscles. He was most interested in his right arm and hand. When Two Button had the beans hot, the stranger made quick work of them, along with a large slab of bread. Finished, the stranger took to examining the newspapers pasted on the walls.
You must have been some time in Arizona.
Ab kicked a gunny sack against the door, where the snow was blowing under in a thin drift.
Nope. A fella just come through and left them Arizona papers. And since the shack needed fresh paper, we pasted them on. It's been 2 years since that roll of papers was left. You can tell by the date. 1886.
Ab's mind flashed to the time a couple of years back when they left southern Arizona in haste. Rock Rib got into difficulties, of which it was better that the badge-toting stranger knew nothing. Ab glanced at Two Button, but the old fellow was still hunched, thinking over the lie that had been told. After 52 years, Ab could read Two Button like a book, and he could see that his part was not taking the stranger seriously.
A house would have to fall on Two Button before he sparked up.
Huh?
Nothing.
What was the name of the fellow that left these papers?
Two Button looked at Ab accusingly. He always claimed that lies got you tangled up and might land you at the end of a rope. Ab had no such feelings. He had handled lies by the bushel and had never ended up with rope trouble yet, unless you counted that one time that Rock Rib and Two Button ambled up just before the jerk and escorted him away from his hosts.
I don't recollect the name of the fella that left him. I don't recollect things as well as I used to.
2 years ago, Rock Rib Burton killed a man round Tombstone. Murdered him.
Rock Rib didn't murder that fella. He gave him his choice to give up the claim he jumped or go for his gun. The fella chose wrong.
The stranger whittled a toothpick out of a match, his eyes like two spots of cold ashes.
Rock Rib Burton was a tough hand in the early 50s. I reckon this is his shack. And you two are Smokey Haynes and Two Button Lewis.
Two Button saw too late the ashy look in the stranger's eyes. He rose carefully so as not to get a crick in his back.
Are you the law?
With a diamond-studded badge and a smoking pistol.
He drew his ivory-handled gun and spun it neatly.
The law, Grandpap. A special kind of law. The man Rock Rib killed was connected with money. And 2 years ain't long for a rich pa to spend hunting down the murderer of his son. On top of my wages, he's given me $1,000 as a plum for bringing in this old Jack's ears. Now don't look so sad, Grandpap. You stay where you are and don't make no palsied reach for one of them rifles on the wall. I'll let you live out the rest of your moth-eaten years.
Two Button's sad eyes were as blank as a set of false teeth floating in a horse trough. He looked at Ab. Both of them knew Rock Rib was due to ride up any second, and here waited a stranger cocked and primed to mow him down. And it would be like slaughtering a lamb, for Rock Rib would be wooden from the cold. But he would go down fighting. Old Rock Rib had ridden too many tough jobs to a standstill to fold up on this one. And they had taken the stranger in, warmed speed into his gun arm, put beans in his belly, and given him the information he was after. Two Button hung on to Ab's glance, begging him to do something. Ab had always said that Two Button's saving grace was knowing he had no imagination. He never raked up something to pass for it and thereby gum up the works for a real artist.
So, you're after that reward too. Well, Sheriff Harry Nassie has kind of figured Rock Rib was a good gent and...
Nassie? Ugh. Does that old has-been know there's a price on Burton's head? Ah, is he trying to beat me out?
Sheriff Nassie's been holding off. He knew the fella that was killed was a no-good claim-thieving snake.
Holding off, has he? He lost himself a neat spot of cash by that play.
Has he been holding off?
Till today. I tried to get Rock Rib not to go to town today. I told him the sheriff was weakening, beginning to fall under the spell of that reward. But Rock Rib wouldn't listen to me. Now he ain't home. Probably in jail.
No, sir. Harry Nassie could never jail Rock Rib.
The bounty hunter was suddenly like a caged wolf. He was so big that when he began striding, he crowded the table to the wall and jarred the stovepipe so far out a joint it began to smoke. Bull-sized and boiling with anger, the stranger left small space in the room for Two Button and Ab. He began to tighten his muffler.
I'll ride into town and take that jail apart.
Ab helped him get his coat on, his hands shaking. If he could just get the stranger back out into the night. But his haste was his undoing. The lawman's lips curled away from teeth that gleamed like the prongs of a pitchfork.
So that's your game, Grandpap. Trying to get rid of me.
He came close to cuffing Ab's ears with his great palm. But when Ab did not budge, he changed his mind.
Try it out. Smart me. And no busted down batch of brains like yours can outthink Chuck Kellerton.
Suits me to have you stay here. Have another cup of coffee, Chuck?
With strychnine in it? Ah, your eyes wasn't tracking when you was asking me, Grandpap.
Well, when you get to 71, your eyes don't track so good.
Just the same, I'll not have any more coffee, and I'll drink my own whiskey.
Kellerton pulled a bottle off his big frame. He had planned on saving his whiskey for some other cold night, but there had been a gleam in Ab Haynes' eyes that warned him of foul play. The three men sat down and remained seated. Ab glanced with a start at Two Button to see if he had caught the quality of those hoofbeats. He opened his mouth to speak and closed it.
What's wrong with them hoofbeats?
Ab turned, realizing that the bounty hunter got the message he tried to send to Two Button.
Them beats? Them beats coming into the yard, you mean?
I don't mean none other.
Yeah. Well, what's wrong with them beats?
Chuck Kellerton's hand settled on Ab's collar.
Speak up!
Well, I know Rock Rib's buck horse as well as my own. He clicks his sharp heels down like he means business. He don't set 'em down like he's a stumbler or knows it. Like the sheriff's black.
You mean that's the sheriff?
Ab looked at Two Button.
It's that devil-crossing Harry Nassie. He's after Rock Rib.
After Rock Rib? But Rock Rib went to town.
And the sheriff tried to arrest him, and Rock Rib didn't stand hitched for it. Now, you know old Harry Nassie ain't letting the snow freeze on his mustache for nothing less than a mighty rich plum. He likes to toast his shin bones on cold nights, but that reward was too much for him. Now he's trailing Rock Rib. That reward is considerable, ain't it, Chuck? I mean, without the part you get personal for fetching in the ears.
Vultures. Two vultures ready to tear at Rock Rib's carcass so as to split the head money.
There won't be no split.
No split? Rock Rib would want the sheriff to have half of that money, 'cause him and Nassie are friends.
He would. It would, huh?
The buzzard! I'd rather a stranger had it than a friend that turns on you. The old spavined turtle! You old ring-boned centipede! You poisoned hunk of coyote bait! Coming out here after Rock Rib, after him helping you tail up your cows when they was frosted down last winter. After me and Rock Rib both set up with you when you had pneumonia. And after the way Rock Rib rode for the doctor when your son got busted up by a failing bronc. Then you come a-hunting his scalp.
Give your tongue a rest. I'll talk to the sheriff from now on.
He caught Ab by the collar and skidded him out of the way.
Now come on in, Nassie. Suppose you don't like the night no better than me.
Sheriff Nassie had never had the reputation of blowing smoke from his ears, but for 20 years he had met trouble and wiggled through. He could swing a gun if he had to, but hadn't been especially speedy even in his younger days. Therefore, he never carried a chip on his shoulder. He had a deputy who was noted for his draw, But when the deputy was home in bed, that didn't help the sheriff. He entered the cabin without any bluster.
Sheriff, I'm here to get Rock Rib Burton, and I don't need your help. You warm yourself and hit back for town.
The new arrival stamped off some snow, took off his cap with the fur-lined ear tabs, and shook it. He pulled off his mittens, unbuttoned his coat, and stepped over to the stove. He wore a gun belt over one thigh, but it lopped at a bad angle and was not studded with silver that gleamed in the lamplight. Lined up against Chuck Kellerton, he looked pretty sorry. Badger gray from 70 years of hard living and a little stooped, he was not much of a threat. His big nose was blue from cold, and a red line weaved across his cheeks where the skin hugged the high bones. His eyes were washed back in his head like two pools of water on a dry mesa.
What are you butting into my territory for?
I'm a special man hired to bring in Rock Rib Burton, and I aim to bring him in.
He gets an extra $1,000 for fetching in his ears.
Nah, I should have grabbed Rock Rib sooner. But he was a friend of mine, and this weather's been such a he-wolf to get out in. I never thought about a special man being sent.
Well, you know it now, and I'm taking Burton back with me.
You mean after you catch him, mister? I tried to take Rock Rib when he rode into town and he shot the gun out of my hand, cracked me on the head, and kicked me after I was down. I followed him, but I never chanced to cut off. He could have saved 3 hours by taking her, but them miles stand on end, and there ain't footing for a mountain goat. Yeah, but he's a he-wolf for stuff like that. I recall the night he went for the doctor when my son was...
3 hours? That would have landed him here before I arrived.
Ab Haynes had listened to the story of Rock Rib with pride. Rock Rib had not let down the rep the three of them built up by 50 years of tough going. The newest member of the party took a pine knot from some wood stacked against the wall and jammed it into the stove.
These knots make a good fire, but they're hard to work up.
Chuck Kellerton grabbed Two Button by the arm.
Which way did Rock Rib go?
Two Button's eyes were deadly serious.
No fella can make that cutoff on a he-wolf night like this. Even Rock Rib.
Oh, he make it. He's come and gone. Listen, fella, don't bother with Two Button Lewis. Now, Ab Haynes is the likely one to question. He probably slipped Rock Rib on his way without ever waking Two Button out of his doze.
He poured himself some coffee and dished up some beans from the pot on the heater.
I'll figure out a way to make Ab talk when I put something under my belt.
He talked as he ate.
Now, listen. This bunch we're dealing with, they ain't regular run-of-the-herd stuff, Kellerton. Old Two Button Lewis yonder's a mild hombre. He likes to tend horses, sweep out the shack, set and oil his gun. But I never come out here and saw Ab Haynes doing anything but setting to thinking up some reason for why he shouldn't make a trip to town on a day like this. That's why I knew Rock Rib would be the man to come to town for the regular supply of tobacco. Smokey Haynes, Ab was known as that in his younger days, according to my reports. You'll recollect, Kellerton, the three of them has records, not posted for head money, but records. Rock Rib's the only one of them that's worth a plug nickel, though. I've looked into it thorough.
You double-crossing old horn-toad!
I knew Rock Rib would be the only one to come to town today. Ab always swells up, tells how tough he is, but he leaves the rough jobs like bucking a blizzard to Rock Rib Burton.
Which is a barefaced lie.
So in rode Rock Rib. But Ab Haynes is the ramrod of the gunwork, and he wasn't called Smokey Haynes for nothing.
I thought Two Button Lewis was the gunny.
Well, in the young days, the record showed he was passing good. Though Ab Haynes and Rock Rib Burton was the tough hombres. Now, all Two Button does is oil his gun and wonder which end is which.
Chuck Kellerton leaned toward Two Button with a fierce stare. The old man's soft brown eyes showed tears at the corners, and his shrunken lips puckered. Kellerton swung away from him in disgust.
I ain't hearing no more about no past history. Let's make Haynes talk.
Abhaines will be a tough customer, but a hot poker on the bottom of his feet should start him talking, or bending his arm backward till it snaps square off at the pit. Oh, hanging him by the thumbs. We might have to use all three. Ab's a tough hand.
Was, you mean? He's empty as last year's snakeskin now.
The old man lifted his gaunt form off the chair. He had put away half the pot of beans and four sourdough biscuits, but he still looked hungry. He wiped his mustache with a bandana and glared at Chuck Kellerton.
You got fire in your blood and power in your muscles now, but it'll get frosted out sooner than you think. Then, you won't be half as chipper as Ab Haines.
You gonna make that feller talk or shall I?
You can have the job if you want. But before we start, you understand you're not high-kneeing it into my territory and packing off my reward. You get that special thousand, and that's all.
Go ahead and make him talk.
Well, maybe I'll split it with you.
Yeah, maybe. Now get Haines to talking. You know him. Can tell where he's shelling out the truth.
Well, I reckon he won't try to lie to me. He was with me the last time I made a Gin Annie up. I deputized him and Two Butt and both. Yeah, I stood the gin against the wall and I...
He became so interested in drawing a knife from beneath his shirt that he let the sentence trail off. Two Button rose from his chair.
None of that on Ab.
Come on with your toad stabber. Cut my ears off so close to my head they'll never grow again. I've had them 70 years, and I'm most finished with them anyhow.
The blade shimmered in the lamplight. 9 spotless inches of steel.
Ab, which one do you favor? I'll take the weak one first, seeing as we've been friends and you've done me a few good turns. I'll leave you the best one.
He turned to Kellerton.
I never knew a man to stand for both ears.
Kellerton had grown a little white about the gills, as though his beans were not resting well. Two Button shrank back a step, the horror of Ab's fate in his eyes. The old man's face was like a snow-locked plain, all but the eyes. They had the anguished look of a dog that had been kicked by one whom he trusted.
Get to carving. We're wasting valuable time.
I look funny without ears. Nothing to hold my hat up.
Two Button weaved back to the wall. Inspiration was in his moist brown eyes, and he went for his rifle faster than you would figure old bones could move. Chuck Kellerton felt danger and heaved about.
Drop her! You drop her!
He dug for his ivory-handled beauty. Two Button had no more idea of dropping the rifle than he had of buying fish. A pellet of lead kicked Chuck's gun from his hand and tore the flesh of his wrist.
What's this dead blame talk of cutting Ab's ears off?
Oh, now you done it. You let this old windmill get a gun in his claws. You let him draw your fangs, and now I'm looking down the wrong end of a rifle.
Arrest him. He's got the gun on me, not you.
Yeah, well, he can turn it mighty fast. Hope two has a wrap as long as your arm.
Get that gun away from him before his shaking sets off another blast.
What's all this talk about cutting Ab's ears off?
Chuck Kellerton thought this was a good moment to go for his underarm holster. His right hand was wounded, but he was almost as swift with his left. His fingers dived from sight. Oh! Ah! Oh! Two Button's second shot also took, and Kellerton fell back against the wall with a wounded shoulder. The knife returned to its sheath.
So you're the gent that horned in on my territory, huh? Rode all the way from Tombstone to help me mind my business. Yeah, got a shot at a pair of $1,000 ears and you muffed the job. Yeah, you let an old man ride you down. And you turn your face to the wall when I take that underarm gun off of you. I'm not splitting my reward with no four-flusher like you. Sid, stick your face against the wall.
Kellerton's youth, which had been standing out in smashing vibrancy earlier, lost its advantage. His fire and strength had been leveled by an old-style rifle in quaking hands. Even his growl was weak as he turned his face to the wall.
I give you a hand in emptying his holster, Sheriff.
After putting Kellerton's weapons into safer hands, they proceeded to tie him up. With Kellerton trussed up, Ab looked on with pride.
I never seen but one man do a better job. That was Rock Rib Burton. He tied a sheriff up in Salt Lake once, and I reckon we was in New Mexico before that badge toter got loose. Likewise, our trail was so cold, he never struck it.
It's a tolerable job. Now, Ab, we'll strike out to catch Rock Rib. As long as his ears is worth $1,000, we'll each take one.
Leave out this carving talk. Stuff like that makes the shivers run up my back. I never seen a man carved up yet that he didn't spoil my supper.
When the three of them left the shack, they found the storm had quieted.
Blizzards have a funny way of letting up. They just give their tails a last switch and roar over the mountains. Then the stars come out and the snow starts to shine.
Recollect that blizzard that caught us when we was in the bitter roots of Idaho? If we hadn't rode blind into that old shack, we'd have wound up spending the winter and most of the spring under 17 feet of snow. If that had happened...
But it didn't. I'd be glad when we get to a warmer climate.
Daylight was over the white land when they met a man joggling along on a black gelding. The black was settling its feet carefully, as though it was a stumbler and knew it. The rider took his mittened hands from his pockets, lifted the bill of his cap, and drew rein.
Howdy. I heard a buzzard from Tombstone was in the county for to collect himself some head money, so I rode out to warn you. I see I'm late.
Yep, Sheriff. But right on to our old home. There's a fella there that might be getting cramps. Rock Rib is a he-wolf at tying.
Sheriff Harry Nassy settled back in his saddle.
I heard this hombre was a wind splitter with the hardware. How come you don't show no battle scars?
Old Two handled him neat as a fiddle. Two was kind of slow to catch on, him having no imagination. But when Rock Rib thought of how Two hates carving, why, things was hunky-dory.
Two Button Lewis wiped tears from his eyes with the back of his mitten.
I sure didn't know what gag them two fellas was trying to pull, but when they started to talk about carving, I figured the joke had gone far enough.
Moving On by Jane Candia Coleman. Nell Pomerine stopped at the edge of the stubble field and looked down at the house in the valley. It seemed lonesome in the middle of the bare yard where a few chickens scratched the hard dirt and the sunflower she'd planted in an effort to pretty the place drooped for lack of water. Their heads hung sadly like the faces of her parents who came here filled with dreams and saw them dashed one by one by the winds, the drought, the blizzards, the grasshoppers that cleaned off crops like a mowing machine and left bare ground behind them. She stood on the sandy track for a minute. Where was everybody? Where was her mother? It was wash day, but the big iron wash tub stood empty over the ashes of last week's fire, and the clothes, work shirts, diapers, shirt waists that should have been drying in the breeze, weren't there. Where were her toddler brothers, Luke and John, with their infant squabbling? Where were the mules, Roy and Sally, their big mule heads hanging over the wire fence waiting for supper? She stood still and watched and listened, and when nothing familiar reached her but the sound of the wind in her ears, she ran toward the house.
Mama? Mama!
She stopped and stared at the blank face of the house.
Mama!
In the house, she found nothing. The pots and pans were gone, the bedding, the quilts, the trunks where clothes were kept. She found a note scrawled in her mama's hand on a torn piece of brown paper.
We moved on.
That was all. That, and the empty feeling in her stomach, the mockery of the silence that wasn't silence at all, but a thousand small sounds that added to her terror. She was alone. She, Nell Pomerine, was all that was left, all that there was to prove that once a family lived here and laughed and loved and worked the fields, hoping for prosperity. She didn't cry. Couldn't. Tears never solved anything. Nell, 14 years old, stood in the house on her own.
Mama.
She sat down on the edge of her bed and thought her way clear to her bones. And what she found was herself, alone, abandoned, but with a gut feeling that she wasn't meant to die for a long while. She saw what lay ahead. Struggle and strife and years. She knew that. Took it on her small shoulders, tried it, and found herself able. After a long time, she got up and went to the kitchen. She found an overlooked pot with dented sides, two shriveled potatoes, and a small onion in the back of the bin. Food first, then sleep if it came. Trouble would keep until morning.
Why'd they go off and leave me?
The sun rolled like a wheel on the edge of the plain, and the house creaked around her the way it always did, except that empty now, the sound was threatening. She lay still, a blue-eyed girl with brown hair and long braids. An ordinary face, nothing to be ashamed of or to gloat over either. Wondering if she had dreamed it all.
We moved on.
The brevity belied a coldness that implied she didn't count. Was as easily erased as a figure drawn in the dust, as quickly forgotten as a leaf blown from a tree. What to do? She walked to the door and sat on the front step, chin in her hands, and thought, looking out over the rise and fall of the prairie. There were families who needed a hired girl who would take her in, and they'd likely work her to death because she had no one to speak for her. She supposed she could go to the Reverend Mason. He'd see she was treated right, would probably ship her off to the orphanage, an uncertain fate at best. Nell wasn't clever with her hands, except around animals, so work as a dressmaker was out too. So many choices, yet so few. She shook her head. Her hair had come loose from its braid and blew across her face gently as cobwebs. The October wind blew cold. Soon it would be winter. Too soon. And she, with no place to go, alone, hungry for a family as well as for food. She heard the wagon before it crested the hill and came slowly down the track. And she squinted against the morning light, hope like a sweetness in her mouth. Maybe they'd come back. Maybe they missed her. She stood up and trotted across the yard, stopped, and leaned on the fence. A woman waiting for life to happen. Levi Solomon took to the road at 14. At first he traveled on foot, carrying his peddler's pack until it seemed he'd been born with it like a hunchback. Felt naked without its bulk. Then one day he got lucky. In the far corner of Kansas, where the plain stood drought-seared and wind-blasted, he came upon a homesteader packing up, turning his back on dream-turned nightmare.
Take the damn mule! Take the damn wagon! The land has already took my wife and child! There's a curse on all of it!
After that, Levi prospered, bought another mule, and replaced the wagon with one designed as a home as well as a place to store his goods. The whole West lay before him for the taking. The sand hills, the prairie, the mountain passes, and meadows of the Rockies. He went where he chose with his pots and pans, his needles and thread and bolts of cloth, his seeds and saplings, tablets, tools, and patent medicines, and the stories that flowed out of his mouth like honey. All the farmers, the ranchers, welcomed him. Levi brought news, gossip, messages, a touch of the theatrical for wives starved for the sound of a voice, for husbands bored with the sameness of it all. The night before, he'd slept out, watching the stars and sniffing the frosty air like an old hound feeling the approach of winter. He was feeling old for the first time in 20 years of traveling, and he allowed himself the odd pleasure of imagining a home and a town, a store that wasn't ambulatory, a fire in his own hearth during long winter nights.
Ah, Levi.
Levi often talked to himself or to his mules that listened stolidly.
And what would you do in a house without the land for company?
The road was what he knew. The road and the land beckoning. He and his mules and wagon bobbing along like a small ship on waves of grass in a prairie sea. Now he drove until he reached the stubble field, saw the sad house and the figure that leaned on the fence.
No money there.
But the woman, at least he thought it was a woman, seemed to beckon him, standing alone in the center of it all. He rolled up to the house and reined in.
Good morning.
He tipped his old straw hat as he spoke, realizing that the person he thought was a woman was a young girl, and a frightened one, if he was any judge. In his years on the road, he'd seen many such, women and girls, some with bloodied faces, some whose men had gone away, burying their dead. But none aroused the compassion in him that this girl did, with her blue eyes the color of sky, and her shoulders squared as if she would take on the world in spite of her fear.
Hello?
Are you the lady of the house?
No.
Well, then, your mama, is she home? I have needles and good thread and some fine wool for winter.
He stepped down and came to stand beside her.
She isn't here. They left. Moved on.
My God, to leave a child, a girl child, out here alone. What kind of people could they be? This is true?
It's just me now.
He saw a glint of tears in her blue eyes, but she lifted her chin proudly.
You have friends? Relatives?
Nobody who'd want me.
It got worse and worse. If he had sense, he'd get back in the wagon and leave. But he knew in his heart that he'd remember how she looked, standing in the yard with the empty house behind her. Knew that she would haunt him no matter how far away he went.
This is very bad.
She scuffed the toe of her worn boot in the sand, then looked at him and his mules, at the wagon with its water barrel, pots and herbs and harness bells strung on the outside like a Christmas tree.
Take me with you.
I can't. It isn't possible. People would talk, say bad things.
What people?
My customers. Good women. What will they say when Levi Solomon comes to trade with their little chicks are sitting in his wagon? What?
Why should they say anything? What you do is their business.
My business is everybody's business. I have to be careful. People trust me, but they won't if they think they have to look out for their daughters in case I kidnap little girls.
I'm 14.
Oh, and that makes you a grown-up,
My mother married at 15.
Marry in haste, repent at leisure. Look what happened. She left you.
Seeing the hurt in her eyes, he wanted to cut off his tongue.
She probably had her reasons.
He put a hand on her shoulder.
Oh, listen to me. There is no good reason to leave a child, a daughter, out here alone. It was a bad thing. Wrong. But I won't make it worse. Get your clothes. You can come with me. At least until we get to a town. Someplace where maybe you can find work. Maybe even find your mama. Who can tell?
The look she gave startled him. He had thought her a plain little thing, but her eyes suddenly blazed with blue fire. And she smiled, it seemed, with her whole body.
You won't be sorry. I can cook and drive a team, and I'm good with animals. They like me. And you can say I'm your daughter. We'll be a family. I don't want to find mine. I don't want to see them again. Not ever.
He thought how he would give anything to see his mother once more. But then she had never abandoned him. Not until her death. Bitterness was a disease. It ate at a person from inside. And this child, with her stubborn chin and fiery eyes, was too young for such knowledge.
What's your name?
Nell. Nell Pomerine. Not that I'm proud of it.
So then, Nell, get your things. Me, I'll catch some of these chickens to take with us. It would be a shame to leave them for the coyotes.
They headed southwest. Levi wanted to put distance between them and the coming winter, but she was too relieved to care where they were going, and a little doubtful, too. Maybe it was a foolish thing what she'd done. Maybe she should have stayed at the house, waiting and hoping, instead of going off with a stranger, this black-bearded man sitting beside her on the wagon seat.
You think I did right, coming with you?
He was annoyed. She could tell by the way his mouth tightened.
Well, what would you have done? Tell me. With winter coming, no food, nobody. Anyway, it's too late now. I don't go backwards.
Why not?
A waste of time.
He flipped the reins.
Yeah. Rocinante, Sancho, walk faster. Don't be lazy.
Those sure are funny names.
Maybe. They are out of a book. But a man and his servant who wandered around Spain and had adventures.
A book? You have a book?
Child, I have many. A life without knowledge is no life at all. And knowledge is written in books.
Can I see him? I'll be careful, honest. All I ever had was the reader in school, and it wasn't even mine.
Oh, not only can you see them, you may read them. And we'll talk about them afterwards, if you want. Which, he reflected, would be quite different from talking to himself. Life on the road was often a lonely thing, knowledge or no. She gave a little bounce on the seat and turned toward him, her eyes once again filled with that strange fire.
I want to start now, please.
He reined up and got down. She didn't wait for him, but hopped out and followed him to the back of the wagon. Slowly, he opened the trunk where he kept the things that were precious to him. A tintype of his parents, the certificate of his birth in a city he had forgotten, and the books that had been his friends since his youth. She peered inside, then carefully lifted out the books one by one, caressing them as if they were jewels.
So many.
There are libraries with thousands of books. More than you can count.
Then I better get started.
He felt the storm long before it was visible. Felt the darting tongue of wind against his cheek and smelled the dampness of snow. It was a day of such brilliance, of a flood of sunlight from a sky so empty of clouds, that a newcomer to the prairie would have laughed at the notion of an approaching blizzard and made fun of his sudden attention. He drove down into a small dell that was protected by the coming together of two hills. Wild plum trees, bare of leaves but with thickly laced branches, formed a screen there. And a pond reflected them as they moved to the music of the wind. Levi was no stranger to weather. He knew.
What's happening?
Nell stuck her head out of the wagon.
Why are we stopped?
Levi gestured to the north, where a cloud, purple and black, had appeared suddenly on the horizon.
We'll stop here. There's good shelter. Maybe we have a couple of hours before it hits.
He unhitched the mules, watered them, and fed them corn before picketing them to the lee side of the wagon. Nell, with the instinct of one born on the prairie, made a fire.
Dinner. Probably we won't have another hot meal for a while.
He eyed the storm closing in on them, the edges of the clouds curling and misshapen.
I'll need to sleep in the wagon tonight.
Where else? Only a fool'd sleep under it in this weather.
Thank you.
What for?
For trusting me. I didn't want you to think that, well...
She didn't understand his hesitation. People froze to death in blizzards or got lost in the blowing whiteness only a few feet from their doorsteps. Storms such as this one was going to be were no time for fancy manners.
Levi, it's cold. That's what I think. And we better clean up these dishes and get inside before it gets colder.
They made their beds at opposite ends of the wagon, with the lantern flickering in between. She put on mittens and a knitted cap and pulled a shawl close around her shoulders. If she were home now, she'd be doing the same thing, trying to stay warm, the snow coming through the cracks in the walls, and no voice but her own to drown out her fear.
Blow, blow, thou winter wind. Thou art not so unkind as man's ingratitude.
You've found the Shakespeare.
Yes, and I just now thought I'd never really thanked you. That maybe I seemed ungrateful, but I'm not. If it wasn't for you, I'd be back there alone and likely freezing to death.
That could happen here.
But at least there's two of us. That makes a difference.
It did indeed. Two people could keep the world at bay, could bring a faint warmth to the inside of the fragile little shell that was all that stood between them and death. two people could laugh and drown out the wolf howl of a storm.
It's a good thing I came along that day. Your being here is a good thing.
She fought down a happiness so intense it nearly choked her.
I think so, too.
Nell lay down in her nest of blankets and curled in upon herself to keep the warmth of it all. And she never noticed when he placed another blanket over her and blew out the lamp. She awoke to gray light and the soundlessness of snow falling on snow.
Leva!
No answer came. To her it seemed that she had always been calling for someone who wasn't there, who would never be there again. She sat up and threw off the blankets.
Leva!
She heard the death of her own voice in the deepness of snow.
Out here!
She stumbled down a narrow aisle toward the rear of the wagon. Outside was a white curtain, blank and thick as cotton, but she thought if she put out her hand, she would touch the hardness of stone.
Where?
Feeding the mules. Don't come out. It's drifted.
Levi appeared, his breath making clouds in the air. Icicles hung from his beard, and his eyebrows were white.
You look like Father Christmas.
But I have no gifts.
Yourself? You've brought yourself.
Such as I am.
He wiped his beard and looked down at his boots and trousers, coated with ice. She followed his glance.
Get inside here. Take them off. Get dry. If you don't, you'll get frostbite. You'll get sick. Do what I tell you.
Yes, yes. Don't worry. Soon the sun will shine and we'll be moving. Don't worry. Levi Solomon has weathered many storms.
But she felt their isolation and knew her own. Always in the past, there had been four walls and a roof. Parents, her little brothers beside her in the bed, giving and taking warmth. There had been the old stove casting its inadequate heat through the curtain that separated the rooms.
Please just get dry. You can't get sick.
Yes. See, I'm dry now. I'm dry.
Gently, he wrapped her in his patient arms, waiting for her shivers to stop. She stayed in his arms, needing the closeness of another, the beating of a second heart in a world empty of all but the falling snow. It seemed a miracle when the blizzard passed and the sun poured out of a sky as blue as turquoise. The white world seemed to absorb its light and give it back, sparkling and radiant. She looked out, held her breath for a moment, and put out her hands as if she could preserve the beauty, could capture the blue shadows of the plum trees, the erratic tracks of a rabbit, the blackness of a raven overhead, his wings defining the sky. Beside the wagon, Rocinante and Sancho looked toward her, hopeful, their ears and whiskers still coated with ice. The sound of Levi's cough filled her with sudden dread. She turned, blinking in the dark, trying to see him where he lay in his blankets.
You're sick.
Just clearing my throat.
She stumbled toward him, knelt down, and put her hand to his forehead.
You've got a fever.
A cold. Nothing more.
And she had thought she was safe. She had rejoiced in the sunlight, the coming of day. Perhaps never again would she trust life or believe in its goodness. For all purposes, she was alone again, marooned in a sea of snow that was too deep to travel over. Once again, everything rested on her shoulders, her life and this man's to whom she was beholden.
Lie still. I'll see to the mules, and then I'm going to start a fire and get you some tea.
You can't.
Try me.
Oh, child, child.
I'm not a child. I already told you. Not anymore, not since they left me. Now lie there and keep warm.
Even when she was an old woman with much of a happy life behind her, she never liked to remember the time that followed. How she dug down through the drifts and struggled to build a feeble fire, scarcely hot enough to warm water. How she searched her mind for remedies her mother used and pulled patent medicines from Levi's stock. How she piled blankets on him, washed him, finally, in desperation, slept beside him during the long, cold nights, warming him with her own warmth, willing him to stay alive so hard that it hurt. When When the snow melted enough to travel, she hitched the team and drove on in search of a farm, a town, the winter camp of Indians. She didn't care, as long as whoever was there had the ability to cure. She shot rabbits for food, she who hated the killing of animals. She skinned them, gutted them, wiped the blood on her skirts, and cooked them, forcing the meat and gruel through Levi's dry lips and trying not to hear the rattle in his lungs. Sometimes she read to him, straining her eyes in the lamplight, the words of the Bible resonant, somehow comforting, though she never really felt their meaning. It was the sound of her voice that was important, a link between her and the man who lay in rumpled blankets, burning with fever.
Oh, my.
Then one day in the far distance, she saw a mountain rising up out of the plain, and she stared at them in wonder, wished that Levi was beside her to share her excitement, to tell her their names. As it was, she had only herself to talk to, only her own questions that she couldn't answer. Was the whole country empty? Where were the people? She had seen only the rabbits she shot, and antelope, and once a herd of buffaloes like a dark river passing over the land. And there were always a few small birds buffeted by the wind that never stopped, that sang in her ears like the deepest notes of a fiddle, dark and mournful. How long a time she spent on the road, she was never able to determine later. But it was long enough to turn her into the woman she knew she was, supple and tough as a sapling and as determined to live. When she saw the little settlement tucked against the side of the mountain, she didn't change her pace, just moved toward it, not blinking, watching, for fear that, like the mirages of the plains, it would suddenly lift and disappear, a trick of light and distance. People came out to meet her.
My goodness, are you all by yourself?
Please, my husband is very ill. Please help us.
The world went dark. She awoke to warmth and the rich scent of roasting meat, and for a moment she struggled to remember where she was. A tall woman crossed the room and stood looking down at her.
You're awake.
Where's Levi?
Nell held her breath, waiting for the answer.
In the other room.
Is he all right?
She hated how she sounded, weak and babyish.
He'll make it, but it was close.
Can I see him?
Sure. He's been asking for you, but I told him you were asleep.
How long?
A day and a night. You were worn out. Must have been quite a trip.
Nell closed her eyes. She felt 1,000 years old.
We were caught in a blizzard. That's when he took sick.
You were lucky. That storm wiped most of the cattle off the range. Killed some people, too.
She shook her head as if she was casting off memories. Then, abruptly, she changed the subject.
I'm Lucy Wickers. I run the post office, such as it is. My husband's a freighter.
Oh.
Nell picked at the quilt a moment, her own words echoing in her head. My husband is sick. Had she really said that? And if she had, how could she explain such a lie?
I'm Nell, and he's Levi Solomon.
Well, Nell, have some breakfast. Then you can take some to him. You both look half-starved. How long you been on the road?
It seemed like forever since that day when she climbed into the wagon and left her past behind.
A long time. I kind of lost track.
Oh, you poor kid. You ought to settle down someplace. Open a store. You could do it here. There's enough in that wagon of yours to get you started.
I guess.
What would happen next really wasn't up to her. All that she owned were the clothes she had with her. She was shocked when she saw Levi. He was pale, and his eyes were sunken in their sockets, and someone, probably Lucy, had trimmed his beard so that it clung to his thin cheeks like a shadow.
How do you feel?
She suddenly felt shy, remembering how she had slept beside him in the wagon, held him close night after night, keeping death and the cold away.
I'm alive, and I thank you.
I didn't do much.
Yes, yes, you did. You saved my life.
Then we're even.
He thought he didn't want the slate wiped clean. With a clear conscience, she could leave, go out into the world where he would never see her again, never hear her voice reading his precious books aloud.
I told a lie. I didn't mean to. It just came out. But you'd better know.
Was it very bad?
Bad enough.
She twisted her hands in her lap.
I said... I told them... You are my husband.
So? So what's wrong with that?
Because you're not. I'm not your wife.
Would it shame you if you were?
Why should it? Why should I be ashamed?
I'm a peddler. A Jew. I have no home. No place. Some people laugh at me. Call me names and throw stones. Maybe even you once.
I never. And if it happened, to us, I mean, why, I'd stop them. I'd throw stones right back. What does anybody know about you? How good you are. How kind.
He watched her face and the quick flame in her eyes and knew she was telling the truth. She would fight for herself as much as for him. Had she not brought them through illness and storm to safety? Suddenly he couldn't imagine going on without her. Just him and the mules and his own somber thoughts.
What shall we do then?
He thought his heart would stop while waiting for her answer. When it came, it wasn't what he'd hoped.
Lucy says we could stay here and open a store.
And? Would you like that?
She folded her hands in her lap and sat quite still, looking at him, at his hollow cheeks, his eyes that seemed to be pleading with her. Running a store would mean staying in one place, building a home, having neighbors like Lucy to help when help was needed. It would mean the comfort of four walls, a fire on the hearth when the storms drove out of the north. But then she thought of the miles they covered together, the land rolling away in front of them, calling, always calling. She thought of the cold nights, of days filled with the dazzle of sun, and how, without him, she was empty, a water jug holding only the sad music of the wind. She found she didn't want the life without him. Didn't want life the way it had been before in that lonely house on the silent prairie.
I think you and I should move on. Together. If you wouldn't mind.
He held out his arms and she went into them. Carefully but surely. For it was where she knew she belonged.
Nell, I wouldn't mind at all.
Great American Westerns is a Graphic Audio production. Performed by Terrence Aselford, Thomas Keegan, Bradley Smith, Danny Gavigan, Eric Messner, Joe Brack, Nanette Savard, Casey Platt, Dylan Lynch, Richard Rowan, Kimberly Gilbert, Tim Carlin, Colleen Delaney, Michael Glenn, Ken Jackson, James Konacek, Tim Pabone, Catherine Aselford, Christopher Graybill, Ted Stoddard, Patrick Bussink, Yasmin Toison, Gary Tells, Michael John Casey, David Coyne, James Keegan, Ren Casey, and Mort Shelby. Additional red shirts by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Terrence Aselford. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Stories adapted for Graphic Audio by Timothy Lynch. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Patrick Stratton. With original music by Johann Detweiler. Breaking the Blue Roan by Honoré Wilsey Morrow first appeared in Everybody's Magazine, December 1921. Copyright 1922 by Ridgeway Publications, Incorporated. Copyright 1997 by Golden West Literary Agency for restored material. Recorded by arrangement with Golden West Literary Agency, all rights reserved. Brother Shotgun by Gene Williams first appeared in Ranch Romances, 2nd June number, June 14th, 1957. Copyright renewed 1985 by Gene Williams. Copyright 1997 by Gene Williams for restored material. Recorded by arrangement with Golden West Literary Agency, all rights reserved. The One-Way Trail by Max Brand first appeared under the byline George Owen Baxter in Western Story Magazine, February 4, 1922. Copyright 1922 by Street & Smith Publications, Incorporated. Copyright renewed 1950 by Dorothy Faust. Copyright 1997 by Jane Faust Easton and Adriana Faust Bianchi for restored material. The name Max Brand is trademarked by the United States Patent and Trademark Office and cannot be used without express written permission. Recorded by arrangement with Golden West Literary Agency, all rights reserved. Wipago's Vow by Cynthia Hasselhoff first appeared in The Morrow Anthology of Great Western Short Stories, Morrow, 1997. Copyright 1997 by Cynthia Hasselhoff. Recorded by arrangement with Golden West Literary Agency, all rights reserved. The Quickest Draw by T.T. Flynn first appeared in Western Story Magazine, December 10, 1938. Copyright 1938 by Street & Smith Publications, Incorporated. Copyright renewed 1966 by Thomas Theodore Flynn, Jr. Copyright 1997 by Thomas B. Flynn, M.D. for restored material. Recorded by arrangement with Golden West Literary Agency, all rights reserved. Spawn of Yuma by Peter Dawson first appeared in Western Story Magazine, May 11, 1940. Copyright 1940 by Street & Smith Publications, Incorporated. Copyright renewed 1968 by Dorothy S. Ewing for restored material. Recorded by arrangement with Golden West Literary Agency, all rights reserved. The Business of Dying by Richard S. Wheeler first appeared in The Morrow Anthology of Great Western Short Stories, Morrow, 1997. Copyright 1997 by Richard S. Wheeler. Recorded by arrangement with Golden West Literary Agency, all rights reserved. Three-Way Double Cross by C.K. Shaw first appeared in Western Story Magazine, June 13, 1942. Copyright 1942 by Street & Smith Publications, Incorporated. Copyright renewed 1970 by Condé Nast Publications, Incorporated. Copyright 1997 by Golden West Literary Agency for restored material. Recorded by arrangement with Golden West Literary Agency, all rights reserved. Moving On by Jane Candia Coleman first appeared in The Morrow Anthology of Great Western Short Stories, Morrow, 1997. Copyright 1997 by Jane Candia Coleman. Recorded by arrangement with Golden West Literary Agency, all rights reserved. Production copyright 2012, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. If you enjoyed Great American Westerns Volume 2, be sure to look for Great American Westerns Volume 1 and for Elmer Kelton's Texas Rangers series, available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloadable extras, audio guides, and podcasts. Keep listening for previews of other thrilling titles in Graphic Audio.
You're not going to celebrate the Grande, Matt Jensen?
I have no interest in Matt Jensen. As far as I'm concerned, Matt Jensen could fall off a horse and break his neck.
I think maybe we are amigos.
What makes you think we're amigos?
For 2 years... we were in prison because of Senor Matt Jensen.
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's Matt Jensen, The Last Mountain Man. Number 6, Dakota Ambush.
You ain't gonna get the money till the job is done. And it does involve killing.
I don't mind killing, as long as I'm the one doing the killing. And not the one getting killed.
Then you're in?
I'm in. Who are we killing?
Matt Jensen. Do you have a problem with that?
No. I don't have no problem with that.
But I intend to make a gentleman of you if it kills you. If it kills you!
Are you planning on talking all day?
No. I'm going to kill you, Mr. Jensen. One way or the other.
Will I never hear from you again?
Never is a mighty long time, Lucy.
You have given me memories that will last a lifetime.
Step outside.
Why should we?
Because I'm going to whip your ass, and I don't want to create a disturbance in here.
Now, which ass are you going to whoop? Because maybe you didn't notice, but there's two of us and only one of you.
Sometimes, it's just the way it is.
Mr. Jensen, what happened?
Available now in graphic audio. Graphic Audio presents R.A. Salvatore's masterpiece, The Saga of the First King. 1,000 years before the Demon War, the Abelican Church is beginning its rise over the dark and brutal Samhaste religion. But the rise is not without its battles. In the midst of this turmoil, there is tension between the Lairds of Hans and rumors that a king is rising to rule them all. All the while, the people of Hans are being slaughtered by the brutal encroachment of the hated, powering enemy. Only one man can usher forth justice for the people of Hans. But his rise to power is cloaked in mystery and deceit. He is the shadow of Hans, the masked man, the giver and taker. Some call him wretched and evil, while others say righteous and just. He is the Highwayman. Be the first to hear the beginning of the epic new saga from fantasy master R.A. Salvatore, the Highwayman. Available now in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.